90.3 FM.
Another reliable communication channel.
Vision Radio on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on www.ckut.ca on the World Wide Web. News, interviews, and music featuring the voices of prisoners, their allies, and supporters. Tune into the Prison Radio Show on the fourth Friday of every month between 11 a.m. and noon, and every second Thursday of the month between 5 and 6 p.m. To get involved in Prison Radio, or if you need to access past programs, email prison@ckut.ca.
Rehabilitation.
I wonder if you know what the word means. Do you? It comes from the Latin root habilis. The definition is to invest again with dignity. You consider that part of your job, Harvey, to give a man back the dignity he once had? Your only interest is in how he behaves. You'll conform to our ideas of how you should behave.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
You were a number, you weren't a man, you want to be a human. I wasn't Jim Crow, and hell, I was number 586.
Why do you do a warder's job?
It's a good job. Responsible job. Officers like myself trying to...
Scum.
We're only enforcing the law.
The law. When they hang my husband, is that just...
Hey, you're listening to the Prison Radio Show. For today's episode. Today we're talking about GLADU reports, which follow the GLADU principle in the courts of Canada, with the goal being to guide judges in making sentencing more equitable for Indigenous people based on the historical and present-day impact of colonialism. Our interview guest is Dawn, who is Innu from Unamanshipu, the Romaine Indian Reserve No. 2. She has lived in various communities in Nunavut, including Cambridge Bay, Iqaluit, and Rankin Inlet, where she worked for the Nunavut Court of Justice. Today, Dawn works for two nonprofits and maintains an interest in both reformative justice as it pertains to Indigenous peoples and Indigenous-specific social work. Just a heads up, this interview talks about colonization, residential schools, and racism and violence against Indigenous communities. Dawn, welcome to a Prison Radio Show. I would love if you'd take a second to introduce yourself.
Yeah, so my name is Dawn, and I'm a social worker. I'm holding two positions, I guess, Inuit caseworkers at two different non-for-profits. I lived in Nunavut for almost, well, between 7 and 8 years, and I write GLADU reports.
Awesome. So the last thing you mentioned, which is the GLADU report, is the main reason we wanted to invite you on to Prison Radio Show today. So I was hoping that you could help listeners understand a little bit about what a GLADU report is, and maybe you could start by introducing us to the history of them.
Sure. So in 1995, I believe, there was a woman by the name of Jamie Tanis GLADU. She suspected her fiance Ruben was being unfaithful to her with her sister, and it resulted in a domestic dispute that led to her stabbing him multiple times, both in the home and then outside the home. And she subsequently was charged with second degree murder. That case was later closed by 1995, and it was the first time where I guess we kind of built the precedent that GLADU principles should be applied to Indigenous people going through the criminal justice system.
So Jamie was an Indigenous person.
She was. She is. Mm-hmm. And she did receive a lesser sentence. I believe she was at the minimum of 3 years for that incident.
Okay. And when you say that was the first case in which GLADU principles were applied, can you start by explaining to me what the term or the idea of a GLADU principle is before we even get into like how they're used in court or how a report is written?
Sure. So the principles really just want to take in a whole picture of an Indigenous offender. So we want to look at historic facts, we want to look at systemic facts, and we want to look at an individual's background and all of those factors in order to have a lesser sentence, but again, never lesser than the minimum for that offense. So if we were to see, you know, a straight indictable offense and the minimum would be 5 years, a GLADI report will never be able to get 4 years. However, it could bring us in despite, you know, possible priors and whatever the case, to that lesser or minimum sentence of 5 years.
So GLADU reports and GLADU principles are basically to help the court system contextualize an individual's experience leading up to whatever the criminal offense was?
That's correct. And I guess a big part of it too is, you know, really, if we want to call it the Queen's Court, but taking, I guess, accountability, and not to the extent that we need them to, but some accountability for just the wrongdoings of the government over the years.
When you say wrongdoings, you're talking about the relationship of, like, the Canadian government with Indigenous peoples?
Yeah, exactly. So things like residential school, which have, you know, significantly impacted Indigenous people. And we're looking at things like intergenerational trauma and just the after effects that have led to, you know, the higher number of Indigenous people that we're seeing going through the justice system.
I wonder if you'd feel comfortable sharing what made you personally want to start writing GLADU reports.
Yeah, so I don't know that it was ever like this big, exciting thought process. I think I really saw a gap while working with the Nunavut Court of Justice. They were using precedent all the time, as courts do, and it was never precedent that, in my opinion, was personally relevant. And I think it just left a lot of gaps. We're looking at offenders who have just very different lived experiences than Indigenous population and using that as the kind of marker to sentence somebody. And it just seemed like, yeah, okay, but, and I don't know if that makes sense, but, you know, it's kind of like this, I understand the sentence, but have we considered just on a human level what this person's experiences have been and how they might have contributed to this crime? Whereas the precedent, you know, has none of those type of lived experiences. So for me, it was just kind of seeing a gap and being Indigenous myself, it seemed, I don't want to say almost necessary, but it seemed like kind of the next step in, you know, some form of advocacy work for me. So even though I'm not thoroughly or fully on board, I guess, with the system, I knew that at least if I were to write reports, I would do them to the best of my ability and really put my whole self into writing the report in hoping to help the person, I guess, or the offender.
Okay, so just to make sure that I understand, because I have a pretty limited knowledge about the legal system, when you say that the courts were using precedent, what you mean is that judges who were sentencing, for example, like Inuit folks in the north were using precedent based on cases that were happening in totally different contexts, and with people who were not Indigenous or not Inuit. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. So we're seeing, you know, I'd be in Iqaluit, let's say, with a very small population and quite a turbulent, I guess, history. And we're seeing them using precedent from, I don't know, Manitoba. Actually, Manitoba is a terrible example because there's a large Indigenous population. But let's just say, you know, Montreal, and it just wasn't, it didn't seem suitable, right? Like, yes, this may be a crime, and yes, they match, and yes, we can use this as precedent because let's say the circumstances are somewhat similar, but these are two completely different individuals. Not only are they completely different, but the weight that being Indigenous and having gone through colonialism as an Indigenous person has just made for such a different life. And, you know, statistically speaking, the outcomes for certain crimes are significantly higher for an Indigenous population. So why is it that we're applying precedent from situations that are completely non-applicable.
Okay, so recognizing that, from what I understand right now, GLADU reports are something that can be accessed by Indigenous people going through the justice system to maybe help create a better understanding of the ways in which life experiences may have resulted in offenses being committed. I'm wondering if you could give an example of when a GLADU report might be written or used.
Sure. So a good thing, or at least something I like to share with people, is the longer the sentence, or potentially the bigger criminal record that an individual has, is kind of the best time to use a GLADU report. So, you know, if we were to look at an offender who has 4 previous charges, we're seeing a repeat of behavior. And in the past, we maybe haven't taken into account what this person's lived experience or life story is. That's a really good time to bring to the court, really, that, you know, historic, systemic, and individual background piece to hope to get them into the, you know, Aboriginal court stream. Because as we know, Aboriginal court really does look somewhat through a restorative lens. And I think that that's, you know, the best way to go about the offenders that we're seeing in court right now that are Indigenous.
Can you explain what you mean when you say Aboriginal courts?
Yeah, so I know in Quebec, the name is a little bit different. I think you guys use Indigenous Court Work Program. I'm not actually sure, so don't quote me on that. But essentially, Indigenous court really tries to take into account community views, maybe more holistic approaches to incarceration. So you'd be looking at healing centers, and you'd be looking at rehab as a potential option, and not always going to long-term sentencing. Of course, there's a bunch of work that needs to be done within these systems, but I think we're at least taking a step in the right direction.
And when people are accessing Indigenous court, is it who gets to decide who accesses what kind of court system?
So I think that really varies province to province, but from my understanding, from at least a federal standpoint, anybody who self-identifies as Indigenous has that opportunity. The biggest kind of barrier we're seeing is that a lot of the time Indigenous people make it halfway through a proceeding before we even identified that they are Indigenous. And I think the second that we're in touch with legal aid, or the second that, you know, somebody's in touch with a lawyer, is a really good time to right away, right out of the gate, you know, hey, I'm Indigenous, whether self-identifying or status, non-status, and just letting that person know so that we can request a report if that's the avenue we want to take, or at least try and request some cultural competency around the proceeding.
So from your perspective and the work you've done, do you feel like people are being offered services early enough, or too late, or not at all, or not frequently enough? Because I'm curious your perspective, having like guided a lot of people through legal proceedings.
Yeah, I think there's kind of like anything. There's a lot of bureaucratic red tape. I think one of the biggest issues we have is that a lot of people just don't know that they're entitled to a report or entitled to, you know, Aboriginal court, because again, a GLADU report is not mandatory. It's just something that, you know, offenders are entitled to. So I don't think there's enough knowledge. And I think, you know, as with most things, it needs to be shared more by the government and shared more by the courts. And there's just a long way to go, but it really is about identifying and trying to identify as soon as you can and getting in touch with resources that work for Indigenous people, because that's where you're going to be informed.
So let's imagine that maybe somebody's listening who identifies as someone who's Indigenous, and maybe has like a long criminal record or who has a history of going in and out of the justice system and is interested in learning about how a GLADU report could impact their case. Can you tell me a little bit about what that process is like? Like, what is it like to write and create a GLADU report? Who does that? How do you access it? What's asked for of the individual involved?
Yeah, so I think typically, you know, GLADU writers, first of all, are ordered by a court party. So again, a lawyer, a judge, or some form of justice committee or tribunal.
So you don't write your own GLADU report. Somebody else has to write it for you.
Somebody else does have to write it for you. And they can only write one at the request of the court, not at the request of, say, an offender.
Okay, so somebody wants a GLADU report written, so they have to tell, like, their lawyer or a legal service they want that, who will approach it to the court, and the court can confirm it, and then find someone who has special training. Like, who gets to write GLADU reports?
That's correct. So typically it's a social worker with some experience in the North or, you know, connection to Indigenous people if they themselves are non-Indigenous, or sometimes individuals that are picked by courthouses to kind of run this programming because there is a lot of federal funding for GLADU. Alternatively, individuals like myself do get training through various places. Mine personally came from Indigenous Perspective Society, sorry. And it's just a matter of kind of getting the training, making sure you understand how, I guess, colonization and colonialism has affected Indigenous people, and being prepared to go through that process with an offender, because it can be quite difficult for both parties.
So once the court has approved that an individual can have a GLADU report written, then the court or like a legal service will find a GLADU writer?
That's correct. So some provinces have lists, and the court will kind of do a lottery process from that list, and other courts will go to a specific organization. In Ottawa, maybe Tunga Suvingat, and request that their justice program or GLADU writers do write the report. And then from there, it is a 10 to 20 page report that can take anywhere from 6 to 8, sometimes more, weeks. And interviewing would start in the early weeks, and that's where you really try and get a whole picture of this individual's lived experiences, family life, community life, ties to their nation or land. And that's kind of how you begin the process.
Who gets interviewed? Is it just the person who's having the report written about them? Or what's that process like?
Yeah, it's not. It's actually elders, community members, anybody who's had close contact with the individual. Sometimes forensics are included. Sometimes health professionals can give, you know, diagnoses and other things of that sort. And anybody who's kind of been in contact with the individual. So, you know, and I don't like to put limits. It could be, you know, if the individual was a child in care, we can go as far back as getting in touch with somebody who was with child services. Or whatever the case.
And when you say child in care, you mean someone who has experience in the foster care system?
Yeah, exactly. If they went through the system at any point for however long, or if they were adopted, or whatever the case may be.
And so when you're doing, so a GLADU report's kind of like building like a really in-depth personal history of somebody.
Exactly, yeah.
And do they talk about, like in a GLADU report, you're looking at, are you looking mostly at the individual's experiences, or how much do you think about like community history or family history or things like that? Like, how do you balance those?
Yeah, so there is a lot of weight in both of those. So family history and, you know, their community and nation. When we're looking at family history, we want to know, was that family involved in the residential school system? We want to know, are you the first person in your family to receive education? Because as we know, that's often common too. And then we're looking at, were there addictions or things of that nature in your family? Again, adoption, foster care. We're really just trying to figure out, who are you, where did you come from, and what does your experience look like? When we do focus on the community aspect in a report, we really want to know, what is this community's strength and what are their weaknesses? So are we looking at a community where there's a high suicide rate, which oftentimes is the case? What's the overall picture look like? Do you have a chief? What community members are prominent? How, what's your community picture look like, and what's the health of the community?
Hey, thanks for joining us at the Prison Radio Show. If you're just tuning in, today we're talking about the practice of writing GLADU reports with our guest, Dawn. Dawn is Innu from Unamanshipu, the Romaine Indian Reserve No. 2. She has lived in various communities across Nunavut, including Cambridge Bay, Iqaluit, and Rankin Inlet, where she worked for the Nunavut Court of Justice. Today, Dawn works for two nonprofits and maintains an interest in both reformative justice as it pertains to Indigenous people and Indigenous-specific social work. Just a heads up, this interview talks about colonization, residential schools, and racism and violence against Indigenous communities. This next section will discuss some of the challenges and limitations with the GLADU report system. Are there situations in which a GLADU report can actually hinder someone's experience in the court, or times when you wouldn't recommend that they're used?
Yeah, and I think this goes from person to person. I guess it's all kind of subjective, but in my opinion, it really depends first and foremost where you're located. So some provinces, you're able to get a GLADU report at both, you know, sentencing and bail. And in other provinces, it seems that you must plead guilty before even having access to a GLADU report. And I think that that's super harmful, because I think the idea that the government or courts are selling is that, you know, oh, this GLADU report is guaranteed to get you a lesser sentence. Not the case. It's just, it's honestly a consideration. And again, we know that everybody at the end of the day, despite precedent and despite their best efforts, we all have some form of bias. And so I don't know that it is always a good thing. I think you really want to ask your lawyer or your representative or whatever the case, like, what is this judge that I'm facing? What does their history look like? To kind of figure out, hey, is this a route I want to take? And also, if you're a first-time offender, you know, no priors, it's probably not necessarily a good idea, especially if you're forced to plead guilty. I think you really want to look at, you know, is there an option for restitution here? Or is there an option for other avenues? Because once you kind of get a GLADU report that lies out, you know, or lays out, sorry, your whole picture, that's just a lot of information to share with a court who might meet you again in the future. And when we're talking about substance abuse or some of the other...
Okay, so what you're saying is that part of the risk with using a GLADU report is that the report gets attached to your name, and that basically documents a lot of really, really personal experience into the legal system.
Yeah, I'm not sure to what extent the GLADU reports are retained. I do know that it would be attached to that case. And you have to be cognizant in that when, you know, the judge is giving his sentence and speaking of his quote unquote wise as to what the sentence is and discussing precedent and whatever the case, you know, it's not unheard of for them to pull maybe a statement from the report, something in terms of, you know, in light of XYZ, so personal information that was shared within the report, it's of my understanding or whatever the case. So that information really just might be shared. And we know that there's, you know, court transcripts, and if the judge is asking questions based on the report, or if, you know, just some of that personal information comes to light, it really is out there and people can have access to it. Of course, there's some things that would have to be admitted just for the rules of the court. And if there was any type of involvement with the youth criminal justice system, then you wouldn't be able to share that information. But I think it's just always a good reminder that that really personal, oftentimes really traumatic information is out there and accessible.
So a GLADU report is confidential between the writer and the person who has the report being written about them, but then it also gets given to the judge. And then when the judge is doing the sentencing, it can also be transcribed.
That's correct. So as with any court hearing, if the judge were to say something, it would be put on the record, so long as it was said in open court. And again, if we go back to how the reports are requested, it's oftentimes from a justice committee, from a lawyer, or from a judge. And although the GLADU report is supposed to be, you know, strictly for the judge's consideration, sometimes if the lawyer requests it, that's whose hand that report will go back into. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I do think it's good practice to have a lawyer that you trust and somebody that, you know, you'd be okay having this information. But the fact of the matter is, a lot of the time we're using legal aid and it's not somebody that you trust. And in any other circumstance, it's not somebody you would consider. So, yeah, I guess it is just a lot of personal information that's out there that others could at some point have access to.
I mean, to be honest, it sounds like pretty invasive. Like, I have a pretty hard time giving like my personal medical history when I go to the doctor. So I can't really imagine going through like digging up my entire family history and like asking people to be interviewed for this process. And also it seems really tricky because it sounds like it's being positioned as a helpful tool for people who are in really difficult situations.
Yeah, it is terribly invasive. And I think that's one of the hard parts about doing the interview portion of the reports. There's a lot of probing questions. There's a lot of getting into the history of the person in both family. And unfortunately, when we're dealing with Indigenous populations, there is a lot of trauma and just really unfortunate events and shit that we're looking at. And so, you know, when we're speaking of addictions or we're speaking about domestic violence, those are all things that oftentimes come up. And it's never easy to talk about residential school and someone's experience, but capturing, I guess, the emotion for me is really important. And so getting kind of those extra details or extra layers does make the report complete. And it's hard because it's also hard for the offender reliving those really terrible things to somebody you've never met before is exactly what you said, invasive and really hard. So it's kind of like this delicate balance of, I know this is a really hard thing for you to talk about, but I am trying to help you as best I can. And, you know, with that being said, it's also important to know that there are some writers that are just employed by the court and they may not even want to help you. And I think in that case too, like, if you don't have somebody who cares to write the report for the right reasons, you're hindering yourself because they're not going to be able to capture that, you know, robust picture we were talking about.
Yeah, maybe that makes me kind of want to wonder, like, or kind of want to explore who writes GLADU reports. Like, who are these mysterious people?
Yeah, so some of the time it's people, you know, hired by the courts to kind of fulfill their Indigenous quote unquote section, which, you know, receives federal funding. And sometimes it's individuals who just have a combination of, you know, expertise in a particular community or experience working with Indigenous populations in a criminal justice system or setting. Sometimes it's a social worker who's done a training. I think in a perfect world, it would be only Indigenous people who had access to write these reports, and only people who had done cultural competency training and, you know, gone through a kind of like thorough process and vetting. But the fact of the matter is there is organizations out there who will give you a 2-week, 3-week, 4-week, 6-month course. And from there, you're kind of free to write a report. So that's something to keep in mind too.
So is there like, so basically someone who has some sort of relevant reason to become trained could do so and then get like a certificate that adds them to a list that the courts have access to?
That's correct. It does vary again, province to province. For myself, I did take the Indigenous Perspectives Society course, and then I was added to a specific list, which is accessed through both BC and Ontario. But there are plenty of organizations that offer these courses with no real interest in finding out if this person is Indigenous or what their contribution is. So,
do you think that Gladue reports, I mean, I guess maybe this depends on the individual writer, but you can answer this better than I can. So like, do you think Gladue reports do a decent job of understanding sort of how colonialism is ongoing? Or do you think it just sees colonialism as something that happened in the past?
So there is a portion which you're supposed to speak on the individual's current circumstances. So to an extent, I mean, the fact of the matter is between a 10 to 20 page report, there's no way that you can truly capture all these things, especially if you want to do a good job and be thorough. You can speak to, I guess, under the, you know, current circumstances bit, ongoing racism and ongoing effects of colonialism. But I think that, I don't want to say we've gotten better, because we have not, but we've seen a shift in how the injustices, I guess, are being, you know, like when we think about residential school, there's just no hiding it. And when we talk about, I'm one of the people who believes that the government absolutely had their hand in genocide. It fits the UN's criteria for genocide, and yet Trudeau will continue to say, no, this was not a genocide. But the fact of the matter is, you know, that's what it was. And we can speak to today's situation, but only so much. And I think there's a lot more weight when we want to talk about past incidences, only because it seems as though the court system, the government, is only just now starting to acknowledge the past, let alone the future.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, it feels like the purpose of the Gladue report is kind of like the government trying to do like a very small effort to try to understand the way like this, like historical harms and ongoing harms towards Indigenous communities have resulted in like wildly, wildly disproportionate numbers when we look at the prison system and in incarceration.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's important again to note that the Gladue report is just to be considered. It's not, it's really up to the judge. And unfortunately, if you get a judge who just doesn't care, that Gladue report is almost going to hold no weight. Of course, the goal that all these different provinces and systems set out is that we're supposed to apply Gladue, but when push comes to shove, is it actually being applied, you know?
Yeah. And do you think that when lawyers or when individuals are deciding whether or not to write Gladue reports, do they look at the specific judge assigned to the case, like to see if it'll be worth it? Or is that not like a known piece of information?
I think when we're looking at even lawyers, I think we all know that the majority are going to be white individuals. And I don't even think that a lot of the time it crosses their minds that like, hey, this person may have bias, or to even look at this judge's, you know, past or history. And that's not a slight at lawyers. I just think it's like where we are right now as a society is we're just not ready to acknowledge the full extent of injustice or discrimination or whatever you want to call it. And so I guess that's really my main advice is like before you go the Gladue report, also try and investigate like who is going to be reading this in the end and will it be of any benefit to me. And I know sometimes with legal aid we're looking at lawyers who want to do the absolute bare minimum, so even getting an answer to that question is out of reach. It's a hit or miss. It's a hit or miss. It's a good question.
In your job doing support for the Inuit community, have you had situations where people ask your opinion on whether or not they write a Gladue report? Or have you had situations where you advise for or against?
So again, oftentimes you're kind of just passed a name and told, hey, here's a report to do. Get it done. I think I've definitely had cases where it's kind of like, I don't know how this is going to go. And I know your aim is to get a lesser sentence, but, you know, I'm looking at your history here and you're telling me that we're, you know, 98, we're at like the 99th charge, you know, and it's kind of like, there's just these behaviors that you're seeing repeated and we don't, and you know, it may be your fourth or fifth report and the likelihood that the judge is going to give a lesser sentence is very slim. But again, that's not for me to decide. It really is not great to complete a report with all the effort and all the invasive questioning of an individual only to see the maximum sentence handed out. But it does happen. So.
And just to make sure, I think you mentioned this already, but just to make sure I understand, a Gladue report can't override mandatory minimum sentencing.
That's correct. Now, again, I only want to speak for the provinces I've worked in because I'm finding a lot of differences across the board. So let's say the minimum is 5 years. A Gladue report will not get you 3. It'll get you 5 in one day.
So one of the things I think we sort of circled around a little bit is how difficult this process can be, not just for the person who's having their life sort of put on display through the Gladue report, but for the others involved. And I guess I'm wondering if you can speak from your perspective as a report writer about what that's like to witness and work alongside.
Yeah, so something that's always been really challenging for me is speaking to elders about residential school, about day program schools. It's, you know, the fact of the matter is the last residential school closed in the 90s, and that's honestly yesterday. And I think it's really hard to speak to individuals about residential school knowing full well that they've experienced it themselves. So we're asking, you know, very invasive, as you said, very personal questions. And in asking that, we know that these people have experienced this themselves. It's not really an outsider opinion. It's very much a current reality for many of the people we're talking to. And then for the accused, you know, it's never easy to talk about familial relations that are turbulent. It's never easy to talk about instances of sexual violence, domestic violence, substance abuse. These are not easy things. And one of the hard parts, I guess, about Gladue is it's almost done backwards. I think the consideration should be, let's provide the lesser sentence because you're Indigenous and because we already have the understanding of what that means. Instead of, I'm aware you're Indigenous, so please share all your trauma, all the wrongdoing, all the neglect and all these things that you've undergone. And then maybe we'll consider that enough to hand out the lesser sentence. And I think that's, you know, one of the points that's kind of missed by the government. So it's a very raw, very emotional process for both the writer and the, you know, accused. And honestly, in an interview, there are many breaks that are taken, I think, for both parties. It's not something that you can just sit and hammer through. It's got to be done with finesse and a certain delicate, careful approach. And, you know, working in a mental health space or working in like a helping relationship environment, you know how harmful the retelling of these events can be. And so, yeah, it's hard for both parties and it just needs to be handled with a lot of care.
Yeah, and one thing I could imagine happening is for community elders having to sort of participate in multiple GLADU reports over the course of their life, depending on members of their community. And that sounds like it could be like even heavier or more involved.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what we're seeing. We're often going back to the same sources, right? It's to the same elders because we've received results. We've had them answer a request. And we're speaking of communities with sometimes 300-400 people, 1,000 people, everybody's family at that point. And it's hard. There's no other way to put it. I think it's just hard. And yeah.
Yeah, no, for sure. I'm grateful that you highlighted on sort of like the emotional toll of this and how it seems like a really difficult situation, because I like understand the purpose of the GLADU report, and also it sounds really tough for people participating in it. It sounds really difficult for people writing the reports, especially if they themselves are Indigenous or have like close familial ties, and it sounds really hard for the people who are being interviewed. And it sounds like the goal is also for people to receive like lower sentences or more equitable sentencing, but with like a pretty large emotional toll that comes along with the process.
Yeah, I think something I've experienced as well is people coming back for their second or third report and being like, oh, well, you know, you've met me with a lot more understanding than the previous writer. I don't think he cared. And that's something that's kind of reminded me, like, even on days when I don't feel like doing this, or I feel like it's too hard, or I feel like the emotional toll is too much, that it really does affect the individual's future. So
is it often that people will have more than one GLADU report written about them? I mean, I guess this is really case by case, but I didn't realize you could even commission a second.
Yeah, I think it's case by case. Again, you're entitled to that report at every, well, I guess provincially that may differ, but you're, you know, at every charge, let's say, or grouping of charges. So you're always entitled to one. It's not mandatory. But yeah, it's not unheard of for people to have two or three, which is, you know, when we go back to talking about the option in Quebec where apparently you must plead guilty, that's super harmful to have three different guilty pleas right off the bat without, like, it may not just be the best legal advice or step to take in that case. So, you know, case by case situation.
If an individual's having a second or third GLADU report written about them, can it cite the previous one, or do you have to re-interview elders?
I think to answer your question best, it's not. Here's the thing. I'm really quite confident in my work, but I don't want to cite from a report that I don't have access to. So I think in my personal reports, I don't necessarily cite unless I've done the previous report, which can happen. If I have done the previous report and I've already done the interviews with the elders, I may just pull from my previous interview if I feel that the information's fresh. However, as we know, oftentimes if the person's already within the system and we're already at the GLADU stage, the likelihood of them actually being out and able to, you know, add another charge or offense is going to be quite a ways away. So I wouldn't say that citing does happen, but I think it's a great idea when we're looking at like cases of re-traumatizing the community. I don't want to ask the elders the same intrusive, invasive questions. And I also don't want to do that for community members. As we know, getting information from doctors is difficult enough as it is. So if I've already got a bit that was provided on diagnosis, why not use that? Of course, I would inquire, has there been any updates? How has this person's status changed? Whatever the case. But yeah, I guess that's how I could speak to citing previous reports.
I mean, from my perspective, that makes a lot of sense because it sounds like you've developed sort of like your own best practice system. Like when you're in this situation, as much as possible, you're going to try to avoid re-traumatizing and re-asking people who have like already survived so much and like lived through the process once.
Yeah, but again, if I speak to the accused and I they're sharing with me, or I get the understanding that, hey, that last person didn't do a good job, I may go back to the same sources and say, hey, you know what? This is how I feel about this. This is what I'd like to see happen. Let's see if we can get there together. And again, just using those same questions of like, hey, this might be a hard process. I'm so sorry. Are you okay to continue on?
You approach your work with a lot of integrity.
We try.
It's good. It's cool to hear about. Thank you. One of the things I've been reflecting on a lot in talking about this is the ways in which participating in writing a GLADU report could be really re-traumatizing, to have to relive past experiences, to know you're going to subject family and friends to talk about past traumas, lived experiences of violence, racism, colonialism. One of the things I'm wondering about is what it's like for the writer to listen to all of this information.
Yeah, I definitely say it's not easy all the time, but I'd also say it's a really, I hate to say the word beautiful, but it's nice to, you know, meet certain offenders who trust you enough to share the really nitty-gritty details. I don't want to use the word fulfilling because the circumstances are terrible, but it's a weight off your shoulder when the offender wants to work with you. And I hate that I continue to use the word offender. I think I should be using accused. But it's just it's a nice thing for myself, having lived in the North, being Indigenous myself, and having the lived experiences that I do. I've not really heard anything that shocked me, which is sad to say, actually. There's been things that have been grim and hard and difficult, but they were not necessarily shocking. I think a really good practice for myself is when I am talking about residential school and I am talking about, disproportionately high suicide rates and things of that nature that affect my own community and my own family, is really taking the time afterwards to do that self-care stuff and give myself the whole 8 weeks to write the report. Something that they can put a rush on it. But for me, that's just not a practice I like to get into, because I think, A, you're not able to capture the picture in a rush time frame. And just for yourself as a worker and a person writing that report, I don't know that it's necessarily healthy or easy. So,
what are some of the ways in which you've built like spaces of trust when you're doing interviews with people? Or how do you have any practices that you use to help make it a safer space for people to share?
For myself, I really introduce myself as I am, I guess. And I don't approach it as somebody who works for the court, because I'm not. And I make sure that the other person understands, hey, my goal really is to help you, which can be hard because we know that people going through this process don't trust the system. And rightfully so. But I really do my best to try and get on the same playing field, yet at the same level. Hey, this sucks. Hey, this is going to suck. What we're doing here isn't easy, but my hope is that we can get you that lesser sentence that you're seeking. And I'm really sorry for everything you've gone through. And thank you for trusting me with this, because this is somebody's future. And I think that's what a lot of writers forget, is that what you're, the work you're doing actually impacts somebody, and it impacts somebody long term. So
are there any things you do to practice like ongoing consent during interviews, or like check-ins, or I'm curious about like really specific like strategies about that to make sure people feel like they're still agreeing with the process?
Yeah, I think I often check back just in saying, you know, at the end of each of my questions, if you're okay, do you mind telling me about XYZ? And the other thing to keep in mind is not all interviews are interviews. There's often worksheets that we give that individuals can fill out. But for me, I think part of having the safe practice is actually talking to the individual, the community member, the elder. And then keeping in mind that, you know, literacy rates and things like that are just not the same for the indigenous population. So I prefer to have a real life conversation. And a lot of the time, if the individual is struggling to share the facts, sometimes I approach it in a manner of, hey, can you tell me the story of when? Storytelling in Indigenous cultures, community is huge. And sometimes having it told in a story and implementing, I guess, like familial tradition really helps make the process go a little more smoothly. And then to go back to the consent bit, letting people know that we can stop whenever they want. They can change their mind about whether they want to go this route or not. And being prepared to admit to the court if requested, yeah, in writing this report and in interviewing this person, it wasn't safe to continue. I will let them know that that is an option as well. So
one of the things I'm wondering about is, and this might, I'm sure, like all your other answers, this varies from province to province. And I'm sure this varies if people are using legal aid or have hired their own lawyer, but are there costs associated with producing a GLADU report?
Yeah, so like you said, it'll vary from province to province. I can speak for myself that a typical report will be anywhere from $1,200 to $1,700 per report. And if they're putting a rush on it, it can be up to $2,500 to maybe $2,800. So it is quite pricey. Oftentimes there are pools of funding that have been given to, you know, whatever court through the federal government in support of Aboriginal court process. But I know that there are certain populations or places, sorry, with Quebec coming to mind, where there could actually be a cost to the accused in certain circumstances, which I think is just another barrier and should not be allowed at all, frankly. And again, you definitely want to fact check that information, but there is definitely a cost associated, and who picks that bill up is dependent.
Yeah, the thing I'm thinking about is kind of like, it feels like a thing that if somebody wants a GLADU report written for their case, it should be free and accessible. And also people who are writing these reports should be paid for their time and energy, because this sounds really intensive. And based on the time commitment you're talking about, $1,200 doesn't actually seem unreasonably high.
Yeah, it's definitely hard work. And I don't think it is high, though. I think the actual figure amount, when you look at it strictly as that amount, is high. And that's, again, that's where some provinces, have really gotten it right, in that they have this pool of funding and it's completely covered for the accused. I think that's the best practice, is it needs to be free and it needs to be accessible, because, again, not having a tool like this accessible is just another demonstration of a barrier that's there for Indigenous people.
Do you see, when you talk about a province getting it right, can you give, do you have like a specific example of a place where GLADU reports are really accessible or like an organization that supports people in doing this?
Yeah, so I happen to be a huge fan of BC, British Columbia's system, while not perfect, has just had a lot more time than I think the rest of Canada. And maybe that's just a direct correlation to the community that's out there. There's so many not-for-profits and organizations in BC, and just BC's legal aid system alone, you can find so much information on GLADU reporting, where in Quebec, for instance, it's a little bit harder to find those resources. We've got the Service Parajudicial Autochtone de Québec, I guess. And, you know, outside of that, there's only a handful of resources. So BC, I think, is definitely on the right path. And I think a close following to that would be Ontario.
Do you have any organizations, if people are interested in looking online or learning more, are there any organizations that come to mind, even if it's not the province they live in, just to see, like just to access more information?
Yeah, I think Tunga Savinga Inuit is a really good option. They are based out of Ottawa, but oftentimes super helpful and will always redirect you to another organization that's in your area. They are also an organization that will not charge for the report. And yeah, they're just a really good point of contact to kind of get you in touch with other organizations. Oftentimes you want to check with friendship centers, and just other, I guess, on the ground organizations that have access to Indigenous populations, because they'll be able to at least guide you in the right direction, or at least that's the hope. So
just to sort of wrap up here, one, I just want to say thank you so much. I've personally learned a lot. I've heard about the process of GLADU reports, but I haven't ever actually spoken to someone who writes them and who has sort of just like personal investment in the process. So thank you so much for sharing your time and information with myself and with everyone who's listening. Before we close completely, I'm wondering if there's anything we haven't talked about or that hasn't been mentioned that you'd like to be part of the interview.
You know what? I think you've asked some pretty good questions. And so I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but it's been really great speaking with you and sharing the little bit that I do know. So
awesome. Thank you so much, Dawn.
Thanks so much for tuning into the Prison Radio Show, and big thanks to Dawn for joining us on air to share her expertise. Our next show is June 9th at 5 p.m. and then June 24th at 11 a.m. The final outro of this show tells you how to get in touch. Give us a call. We want to hear from you, and we want your pitches for show content. Until then, take care. Talk to you soon.
The Prison Radio Show is a twice-monthly news show on CKUT. The show seeks to confront the invisibility of prisons and prisoner struggles by focusing on the roots of incarceration, policing, and criminalization, and by challenging ideas about what prisons are and who ends up inside. We are dedicated to programming that is directly collaborative with people who are currently incarcerated. With that in mind, we would like to let you know that we have a phone line for prisoners and their outside supporters. In fact, we have two phone lines. You can call us Collect from Bordeaux Prison and Riviere des Prairies Prison by calling 514-876-3748. We also have a number for non-collect calls. That number is 438-337-8423. Feel free to call that number and leave a message for us with news to share on the show or an audio message for your loved ones inside. Thank you.
Good afternoon. You're tuned to Butcher T's Noontime Cuts, hitting every Friday from noon to 2, playing your wide variety of music just to make your afternoon delight just right. So stay locked to CKT 90.3 FM.